and the wisdom and experience on a Monday of Robert Craddock. Crash, hello.
G'day, Jared. What a dramatic day. And what about this weekend's footy? It's terrific, isn't it? I loved your exchanges with Kingy. And I was thinking, Jared, who would you rather be? Like the Cats, with everyone saying, oh, they're just playing with the magnets. They're just waiting, just fiddling around sort of thing with all this pressure on them. Or the dear old Brisbane Lions. Are they still in the competition?
Yes.
Up here, people are saying, oh, no, it won't be the Lions' year. I mean, it's not a bad place to be when you're equal second on the ladder and people are subtly writing you off, you know?
Makes for a big Friday night in your town, doesn't it, with Brisbane and Melbourne to meet?
Oh, look, and Jared, do you know what? I feel so good for Greg Swan and also Chris Fagan because, yes, everyone says that the Lions need a premiership to frank this era, and in a way they do, but I tell you what, having lived through the years where they were just going nowhere, plotting for year after year, to see sell-out crowds again in the Gabba, they've got the code up and running. I really feel they deserve enormous credit.
Crash, the most desperately sad story in Australian sport of the past 4 or 5 days is the death of Paul Green. Just before we start on this, just tell those who aren't fully aware who Paul Green is, what his place in the game was.
Yeah, well, he was a very underrated halfback who won Rothman's medal, sort of like the Brownlow, in two states, in Queensland and New South Wales. He only played 7 Origin games because his career was sort of blotted out by Alan Langer, who became one of his great mates. And it said a lot about Green that he loved Langer. He went on to coach the Cowboys to that famous first premiership in 2015, where a field goal allowed them to beat the Broncos. But, Jared, he committed suicide last Thursday morning at about 10 a.m. If you said what is the story behind the story, there was enormous sadness for Paul in that people close to him felt that he did, once the rugby league caravan moved away from his door, he struggled like so many coaches so often do. And I actually wrote a piece today looking at how AFL coaches have struggled, like guys like, you know, Mark Thompson. We all know poor Danny Frawley took his own life. And then there was James Hurd, who, you know, had so many big issues after the peptide scandal. And that's the part of life people forget for coaches. And Graham Arnold gave a wonderful interview today saying that he said adrenaline is the most addictive drug of all. And when it stops, it's so hard to replace, you know? We had a rugby league coach, a guest on the back page a few weeks ago, who recently was dismissed. And in the green room, he said, it's your weekend you notice it most. You know, they used to be taken for granted. You had your schedule there. There were times of high pressure. The adrenaline's flooding. Now you don't know how to plan for them because you've never had to plan for them. So, yeah. So it was. It has rocked the community, Jared. He was a real local boy in Brisbane, a Winner Manly guy. He loved his home suburb and high achiever. He had a pilot's license in grade 12. If you don't
wow.
mind, Jared.
Yeah.
Was a Harvard graduate. You know, an amazing person.
What were the scenes like across rugby league games across the weekend, Crash?
Well, there was enormous sadness as people searched for clarity, and everyone had a nice story about him. James Tarmo, you know, from the West Tigers, who of course was part of the Cowboys premiership team. He said he was ironically ahead of the game in terms of mental health for players. He was developing a wellness app. And his longtime sponsor, Mick Power, said, we will continue and we will finish that app and we will get it up and it'll be a tribute to him. But I felt, Jared, if you said what, quote, crystallised the story, for me, it was from the former Cowboys chairman, Lawrence Lancini, who said that Paul Green was a brilliant mind and a perfectionist, and a perfectionist carry a very heavy burden in life.
Yeah.
And this is so true, where if he was so hard on himself, like the two teams that he had coached, the Queensland State of Origin team last year when he lost the series 2-1, but they won this year under Billy Slater, and the Cowboys, which he coached, and he left them after a couple of disappointing seasons, they're now up in the saddle and running second. And, you know, that's hard for a coach to deal with, seeing teams sort of, you know, blossom when you're away. So, yeah, but the burden of being a perfectionist, of sort of wanting everything just right, of judging yourself so hard, you know, it's I just felt Lawrence got it right, Jared.
Yeah, so it feels like a moment, Crash, that will lead to some form of lasting change, that this immense tragedy will have... It will have a legacy. Is that how you feel, even though it's very raw?
Yes, I do. I can see a legacy here where coaches, after they finish their jobs, will be better attended to. We tend to leave them for granted, Jared. We really do, because we think, hang on, they're the teachers, they're the mentors, they're 50-something years old, or Paul's 50th birthday was next month, and you think, no, they're fine, we've got to worry about the players. But it's not true. I did an interview with Chris Fagan last year. We sat down for coffee and he pulled out a pencil at the end of it, and just on the napkin, he said, you know what worries me? He said, have a look at these names. And he wrote down some of the names that I spoke about, you know, Hurd and Frawley. I think Walsh was there from Adelaide. And you know, there was a long list of guys that had suffered not so much during the job, but after the job. And it does leave a vacuum. And sure, there are coaches that move onto other lives, aren't they? Paul Ruse, you know, moving to the States, and Kevin Sheedy selling the good word of the AFL around the place. But I tell you what, Jared, I read this line about English soccer managers a few months ago, and they said there's so many English soccer managers who get up in the morning and water the roses because they've got not a lot else to do.
Yeah. Very sad, Crash. Thanks for sharing that on all of its different layers. Melbourne Storm on Thursday night. So this is what I didn't expect. I thought, you know, they were broadly dismissed going up against the all-conquering Panthers. It felt like they were right up against it. I reckon that was the right scenario for the Storm to have a bold stand against it all. But to win 16-0, I hadn't expected that.
No. I mean, the Panthers are a weakened team at the moment. They've got James Luloy, their absolute inspiration, Nathan Cleary. They're both sidelined with Stephen Crichton in the centre. So they're not quite what they were. And, Jared, you know that situation where the team that's clear at the top of the ladder in the last month, they just lose games, you know. I wonder whether Geelong will lose one of the next couple. But they're back, the Storm. And this is the thing. Good teams often have that little lull around July, don't they? They just lose a few. And the coach, even though he pretends he absolutely hates it, there's a little part of him that thinking, oh, suddenly they're all listening to me again.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit of that. So they're high in the saddle. It's a big year for them because the Dolphins have stolen half of their premiership, half of their pack for next season. So with the Bromwich brothers and also Felice Kaufusi. So, and there is a talk today that Cameron Munster will join Redcliffe, not next year, but the year after. And I understand, as of a phone call about 10 minutes ago, Jared, that is very, very, very close to the money. They really feel confident in getting Cameron Munster.
Right. So that'll send a few tremors. Yeah, that'll send some tremors through. The golf has been quite a spectacle for the whole week, really. It was Tuesday that the report emanated out of the UK that had, as a matter of fact, Cam Smith joining LIV. So that, a hard reality, he sidestepped that at his press conference. The undisguised bitterness between those who have remained loyal to the USPGA and those who have defected, as the court case was heard, with three trying to have the best of both worlds, and the USPGA players, you know, who made the observation, they talk like, we'll see you on the tour. We'll never see you on the tour again. So very territorial. And then Scott Scheffler, who walked through Cam Smith's line in a deliberate breach of etiquette that was impossible to interpret any other way as the resentment of Smith's next move, and Smith's own words, which I probably won't repeat on Monday morning radio. It has been, I mean, the chasm is so deep and so wide, but it's the bitterness that is so striking.
It really is. And I understand in the locker room, it's just whatever we're hearing, it's magnified by a multiple of two and three. Money just creates greed, doesn't it? And it's the resentment from the PGA guys that the LIV guys are trying to have their cake and eat it. And, you know, it was Scheffler knows the etiquette. I mean, Jared, golfers who play three times a year, they've got it drilled into them that you do not stand on anyone else's line. There is no suggestion at all that was an accident. And for every comment supporting one side of the argument, there's always a comment comes back. Jared, I must say, I did laugh at a comment Paul Azinger said today. The tension of Will Zalatoris winning a terrific playoff. He said this is the sort of feeling he will get that he can't, that guaranteed money will not provide. And there's a guy called the Faceless Caddy on tour, and he tweeted back immediately, let me tell you, as someone who has got not much in their bank account, that sort of money, that sort of feeling can be replicated by a huge sum. In other words, he said, put it in my bank account and I'd be, yeah, hey, that'd be as happy as winning a playoff, can I tell you that? So it's all about money and that. Cameron Smith, oh, look, Jared, you know how the sports world works. They've asked him directly three or four times, are you going to live golf? And the fact that he hasn't denied it, there's your answer, isn't it? I mean, put it this way, when some of the golfers who weren't going to live golf, and people speculated that they were, they denied it in about 10 seconds on social media. They said, there are rumours out there. Can I immediately confirm that they are incorrect? And I don't want to... So, but all Smith said is, yeah, I'm in for a bit of a tough month, and so it's all out there.
Yes, and talking to those around the tour over there on that day, they just say as a matter of fact, he is going. So I was interested to read, so there's been a lot to read and listen to on this front. We've spoken about it all year. Malcolm Knox's think piece on the weekend had Smith on the wrong side of the pub test if he chooses to leave. That's not, I don't agree with that. And that certainly wasn't our real-time exercise, whether it was Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning. I feel like there's, in our sample, which was a decent sample over 3 hours, the majority was with Smith if he chooses to go. There are those who feel vehemently against it, but there are plenty who are prepared to put the USPGA on trial and what they have done to Australian golf. I'm not sure that he is the wrong side of the pub test when he makes this decision.
No. Well, let's put it this way, Jared. There was a Golf Digest writer sent out into the crowd at a recent LIV golf tournament, and he actually tweeted, he said, my assignment for the day was to interview people over their concern about human rights issues in Saudi Arabia. And he said, guess what? The first 30 people I've interviewed said, basically, I don't give a stuff. They just want to watch the golf. So they accept that Saudi Arabia is sponsoring sports events all around the world. I conducted my own pub test, basically, just over the last week, just mixing with people. And that's the vibe, you know, that people are saying, well, you know what? What about the Saudi Grand Prix? What about the owners of Newcastle United? You know, and what about the fact that the Gulf used to visit Saudi Arabia, and there was no complaints then. So, but it is a massive fee he's got. Jared, by amazing contrast, we're doing a rich list of NRL and AFL players. And you know the NRL salary cap is about $9 million or so. So if you put every dollar earned by an NRL player next season in a pot, it's exactly the same as what Cameron Smith gets for signing his name for LIV. It's $140 million. So that's every player in the whole competition, what they're earning next year. He sits down, and if he signs Cameron Smith on a LIV contract, he gets that in 10 seconds. Like, yeah. It's just like and that puts it into perspective. Like, people are saying, how do you say no to it? So, because some people feel he won't stay as long in the game as what everyone thinks he is. Not one of these blokes that's still playing at 50 or on the circuit. You know, he misses home. And we always forget something, Jared. They're away from home all the time.
Yep.
You know, he's a North Brisbane boy. He loves taking his car to the raceway, going to the Broncos, taking it easy. Like, he's playing in 22 American cities may not be his idea of great fun.
No, and... Yeah, the one question, so he has to remain relevant at the majors. So that was sort of my marker. That's where his place in our imaginations soars. So he has to be in the majors, and that might be difficult for the LIV golfers down the track. That might be decided by a courtroom. But a 54-hole exhibition tournaments, because we now know that the prize money you win is actually deducted from your contract. So what you sign for is the money that you earn. Is that enough for his talents? So I think that's an open question.
Great question. You know what? I often think that. I have to say this. For all of me justifying why Cameron Smith has appeared to have signed, I'm still really surprised he has. Like, because he's not a real high liver. Sure, he's got the boat, which he goes fishing in and that. But I often think, if you make $30 million, what's another $100 million? You know, maybe.
Yes, yeah.
And people will burst out laughing at that statement. But he has no money worries whatsoever. So, but the thing is, Jared, Greg Norman, in the eyes of these professionals, some of them, has taken the bad bits out of golf. They hate getting cut, so there's no cuts. They hate a long week of golf, so he said, you'll play 3 days, not four. They get no sign-on fees, so he said, here's a sign-on guaranteed payment. They hate 22 weeks away a year, so he said, I'll take you away for just 14. So he's taken the bad bits out of the game for guys under the guise of, oh, growing the game and spreading the game. No. It's not that. It's just having a rival tour.
Yep, and that there's a smart play to be made for Smith in when he signs on, what will he do for golf in this country with a portion of that money. If he does that, he may very well appease those who can be appeased. There'll be a portion who'll never be able to come at it, and that's okay. Let me, slightly shorter today with all that's going on in Essendon crash. So just let me ask you, Meg Lanning is stepping away from cricket for an indefinite break. So this is the Australian captain who has achieved so much and straight after the moment where they completed what might never be done again, the Commonwealth Games gold medal to add to the World Cups of both the 50 overs and the 20 overs.
Yeah, just exhaustion, Jared. And I do feel, and you know, I'm not sure whether there's any subplot here, but look, she captained Australia first time at age 21, and then that's 8 years ago, and held the positions in all three forms of the game. And I know she's only played a handful of tests, but they put in, they trained so hard. The sport has changed around her and grown with her. Like, you think of what women's cricket was 8 years ago, publicity-wise, to now. And she's taken all that on board. And to be honest, to last 8 years at the helm of any Australian cricket captaincy position, I remember when Alan Border retired, and this is 1994, 8 years ago, when there was no social media, he said, if you're Australian captain in anything now, he said, if you can go beyond, he said, I lasted 10 years. He said, I bet no one lasts much more than five going ahead. He said, you go to bed thinking about you. It's all around you. It's so tough.
Crash, great to chat, to tap your wisdom and experience on a Monday. Thank you.
See you, Jared. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Robert Craddock on all that's happening in sport.